Hello and welcome to the TalkCast Pod Show, the number one show on the internet and everyone's favorite punchline. I'm Lanny Pator and I'm joined today by the unknown cousin of the Bat family, Kaiser Neko.
You know, they called me the Batled. It was supposed to be Batlad, but yeah, no one wanted to say it.
It's fine. It's one of the reasons you're the lesser known one. And the king of all sharks, Jesse Nowak. What's up, Jesse?
Hi, I'm good.
So I wanted to bring us in this week because I discovered, much to my great joy over the weekend, that Harley Quinn was finally out on HBO Max. And I have been looking forward to watching this show for a very long time, but I did not want to go out for DC's streaming service on its own, especially since HBO had that big deal with them. It's like, eventually it'll come here. I mean, they got Doom Patrol. So finally, I was able to watch both seasons. And holy shit, I love this show. It is honestly probably my favorite thing to come out of the DC universe in a very long time.
I was really surprised because initially, you know, my favorite version of Harley Quinn is still from the original Batman the Animated Series. And this is a very different take on that character. And as somebody who has seen both Suicide Squad, which was a bad movie, and the Harley Quinn movie, which was a, I'd say, good movie. Yeah, I'll settle on good. It was good. I wasn't sure how I was exactly going to feel about the show, although the show ended up coming up before the movie. And let me tell you, I was blown away by just how good this show is.
It's astonishing. I started seeing like clips of it on YouTube because it's a very clippable show.
Oh, insanely.
Jesse, I know you're huge on this, or at least I'm aware that you have enjoyed it and you expressed interest in joining us for this one. So please, what was your introduction to this Harley Quinn show, and what are your feelings?
Yeah, I'm also just, I'm so fucking impressed by this show. I'm really not that into DC stuff. I'm more of a Marvel guy, but I think they put the first episode for free on YouTube, and that's always a good thing to like get people into it who might not and like give it a chance. And I was like, okay, I'll give it a chance. Yeah, because it's like it's there. I have no excuse to like not give the pilot a chance. And the pilot is, I'm always really impressed when something has a strong pilot because the pilot grips you immediately. Like immediately you're on that. There's the scene where they're on the boat and the pacing and everything just immediately. I was like, what is this? How did this happen? Like, I'm so glad it exists at a time that I do. Because I enjoyed Birds of Prey, the Harley Quinn movie. And God, I'm a big fan of animation where you can tell that the voice actors, they just kind of let them do their thing, you know? It's not quote-unquote cartoony where you deliver a line and then deliver the next line. It's more like they let them improv and stuff, and I was just really impressed by how natural all of the dialogue sounds.
It really is. It has this sort of, like, Archer style of irreverent yet snappy dialogue, but it mixes it with that Rick and Morty-esque visceral punchline-based comedy, and it just does it to such immense perfection. Some of the jokes don't land. Some of them hit like a little bit more juvenile. I can think of a specific one in season two where King Shark is under the sea and is getting a Disney reference thrown at him that is, it didn't land particularly well. But
yeah, same. But I was like, hey, someone is enjoying this, so I'll just sit through it. You know, it's not for me, but I get the appeal. It's it's a dark humor show, so like someone's gonna laugh at this. It's not me, but like, you know.
Yeah, and I guess it's worth saying spoilers for the show. So yeah, that is your warning.
We'll try to stay spoiler free pretty early on, but when we get into like actual heavy spoilers for the plot of the show, we'll let you know.
You know when the show had me, though? You know when I can tell you the show 100%, like, okay, I'm on board as long as scenes like this continue to happen?
When?
When Poison Ivy comes in asking Harley what she wants to order for delivery.
That was so good, yes.
That was a very Archer moment, too. It's like, look, I'll have a green potato curry. Yeah, but just text it to me. But you're right here. Yes, but I'll forget it. So if you could just, you know, text it to me so I don't forget, so I don't order something you'll hate and then you'll eat mine.
Just so fucking good. Text me. Yeah, that, yeah. That is the sort of humor that I live for. I mean, mm-hmm. you know that I'm, my personal writing is heavily inspired by Archer. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there are moments. So the show doesn't play to one type of humor, and that's what I find so interesting. It really tries to run the gamut of different types of, you know, physical comedy, dialogue, more dialogue focused comedy, whole like setups for just really funny stories.
A beautiful visual and character humor, and so many brick jokes. There, I can think of like a dozen little jokes, little things that they make off references to that pay off way later in such a huge way.
Yeah.
Also,
I was just gonna say, yeah, it's almost an absolute masterpiece in that regard.
I generally like, this is one of my favorite DC animated series in a long time. I'll go into my problems with it later, but for right now, yeah. You know what? Who's your favorite characters?
Immediately, season one made me absolutely adore Bane.
Oh yeah. My god.
You're distracting me from my plans. Break the Batman. Make Gotham bend to my will and the streets run red with blood. I'll blow up Gotham Stadium.
They have him played off in this, the Chris Nolan mixed with the Bruce Timm style design. Series Bane. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's got like the Chris Nolan Tom Hardy voice, but he's played off so ineffectually. Like he's always the whipping boy of the Legion of Doom, and it actually makes him really endearing and kind of adorable, and I love it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, no, he's a total whippy.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought that there would be any iteration of a DC show where I would enjoy Clayface so much, but I think Clayface is one of my favorite characters.
Alan Tudyk plays him so damn well, though.
He's so fucking brilliant. Like, Alan's playing like half the fucking cast, and he's so fucking good.
Wait,
I actually really liked his Joker as well.
Yeah, and it's great because like it's such a fucking iconic character that like, how do you I would be terrified to follow Mark Hamill, you know, I enjoy different iterations of the Joker where they're doing their own thing, and Alan has such a unique Joker that immediately I liked him, and I was very shocked by that. I was like, wow, I like him right away.
Yeah, his Joker,
you go right ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, yeah, his Joker is very much its own creation, where it obviously borrows a bit from, I'd say, more of the 50s, 60s Joker in terms of its kind of design and aesthetic.
It has that Hamill edge to it, though.
Yeah. I would almost wager that Tudyk did not do any research on like those old interpretations, though. This kind of feels like he just went into it with, I'm going to play the Joker my own specific way with this script, which makes the Joker, it's so interesting to see the Joker constantly failing too.
Yeah.
And exasperated and just angry all of the time. Also, again, you know, dropping F-bombs everywhere, which by the way, like, holy shit.
It fits. It fits really well.
I was not ready for an R-rated DC animated series, but
it's so good.
Yeah, no, it's real good.
Yeah,
but I was gonna say, if I could go off on just like a small little Alan Tudyk tangent,
mm-hmm. Yes.
It's so interesting that he's basically like one of Disney's go-to voiceover boys right now.
Oh, right.
But he's also everywhere in the DC universe. In Doom Patrol, he plays the main villain. Yeah, and he's really good in that too.
I need to see Doom Patrol so bad.
It's really, really good. I didn't expect it to be good. I still don't think it's as good as Harley Quinn, but it's good.
Yeah. Tudyk being everywhere, like, because I was a big Firefly fan. So for me, Tudyk is always gonna be Wash. Yeah, he's always gonna be Wash in my head. But now that I've heard him in a billion different things, it's like, what, Mr. Tudyk, what can't you do?
To me, he will always be, I think, Dale from Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Oh, shit! That was him!
Yes. I remember introducing you to that movie while we were on a flight to Australia, I think.
Yes, I remember that. I remember, oh my god, and I enjoyed it quite a lot. Also, Tudyk once played Superman. It was bad, and he should not do that again.
But he, like, it just astonishes me that he can, like, he's in both camps, entrenched so deeply.
Yeah.
And he deserves it, because he's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he really does sell it here.
But what about you, Kaiser? Who's your favorite character?
My favorite character? Oh, shoot. So, I think Bane is incredibly funny. I'm actually not... Actually, no. You know what? After season two, I'm more into Clayface. Season one was like, okay, Clayface is there. He's got some jokes. It wasn't until season two where he really gets some time to make it work. That whole episode on the college campus killed me. That is his best episode by far, and made me actually finally love Clayface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same.
But when it comes to favorite characters, favorite funny character is Frank. I just love Frank. The plant. Like, I just love his existence. I love how he responds to people. I love how he's just this fucking...
He's the Greek chorus.
Yeah. But my favorite character is actually Poison Ivy.
I do not blame you. I think she's easily one of the more relatable characters, and she has this like charm to her that Lake Bell really fucking nails it.
Yeah.
I've seen her in a bunch of things, apparently. The thing I recognized her most from was BoJack Horseman as one of Mr. Peanut Butter's ex-wives.
Oh,
right.
Yeah,
Katrina.
Mm-hmm. But she just plays Ivy with this very irreverent tone, but it's also very vulnerable, sassy, and fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's splendid. She's just... Because, again, she's not one of those characters that gets the biggest laughs, but she's always that character I feel the most related to. She does have hilarious lines, but they're always more like, you know, relatable cutting chuckles rather than, like, gut busters.
Yeah, and her Ivy and this Harley have, like, such good chemistry together. I love them
amazingly
in scenes.
Yeah. Like, so much so that, like, you're throughout season two, you're really rooting for, you know, that whole thing going down.
Mm-hmm. I'm so fucking glad they didn't queer bait us. I was, man, no. And in the first season, I was like, okay, it doesn't look like they're going to go that angle. Then the trailer for season two came out and they were hinting at it. And I'm like, I swear to fucking Christ, guys, if you don't actually commit to this, I'm going to be pissed. And did they commit?
They commit super hard.
Yeah. Oh,
like it's an incredibly adult, raunchy show, but it has this weird, oddly wholesome heart to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, how else do you explain a scene where they're literally sitting at the end of a dock while
pouring acid
down the gullets of a bunch of rich CEO fuckers, which, by the way, there's a reason I love Poison Ivy as much as I fucking do.
Yeah.
I love that she's basically, every time it's like, supervillain. No, I actually, you know, I'm an environmentalist. I don't know. I don't really identify as a villain.
Yeah.
I mean, she recognizes that she's a bit of an environmental terrorist, but she also leans into that. She knows what she's about. She's about pouring acid down CEO's gullets, and I'm...
Who want to destroy the world.
Yeah, as I said, relatable.
They do such a good job at... I've been really impressed by how they've been portraying toxic relationships and just abusive codependency and, like, all these like, subjects that... I'm so impressed that this adult cartoon is handling so well. You know, because BoJack is one of my favorite shows ever, and they go into really dark stuff in that show as well. And Harley Quinn is handling it with such grace that I keep waiting for them to fuck up, but they didn't. In my opinion, that just all through season two, they just did everything correctly. In my opinion.
Yeah, and here is where I think might drop a lot into spoiler territory. So if you haven't seen this show, all three of us highly recommend go checking it out. It's on HBO Max. I think you can buy each episode on, like, Amazon, but wherever you find it, recommend it highly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, please do. Absolutely.
if you don't want to get spoiled on it from here on, this is, you know, this is the warning light being turned on for you. But what amazed me about, like, that whole, you know, like, the way they handled toxic relationships and stuff like that is, you know, sometimes whenever a movie or a show will deal with a toxic relationship, it always ends with, like, a massive, like, vengeance spurt where it's like, yeah, no, I'm liberated, I'm good. But no, this one actually handles it where they like, the Joker and Harley end their relationship and they both move on.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so bizarre. Like, they coexist in the world where you never saw that happening in season one.
Yeah. I was really impressed that, you know, something that hit me hard was, like, they separate and then Harley relapses. She goes back to him mm-hmm. at a point and is like, and then he betrays her again. And she's like, fuck, why did I do this again? You know? And some people, if they've never been in an abusive relationship, they might be like, why did she do that? That doesn't make any sense. But people who have been are like, fuck, that really hits home, because sometimes you do that because you don't, especially when it comes to codependency. When you get out of an abusive relationship, sometimes codependent people don't know how to exist outside of themselves. So Harley especially, she says, I'm going to go out on my own, I'm going to be my own villain, but I do want to impress the Joker. But I'm going to be my own villain, but also it'd be cool if I could impress these people. You know, like, she keeps going back and forth trying to, like, figure out how to exist on her own and be her own person and her own villain, and is still trying to do it for someone else. And Ivy sees that and tries to pull her out of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's actually that oddly wholesome.
Yeah, it's the oddly wholesome heart of this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Kaiser.
Actually, I was basically going to say the same thing. It's wholesome as fuck. You've got mm-hmm. this supportive friend who sees her friend in pain. She knows what this cycle is. She's seen it before with other people. And even though she has problems recognizing her own faults, she's always there, not judging Harley, but, you know, there as a support to help her get out of her problems. And it's actually pretty beautiful to watch. Like, mm-hmm. just seeing this friendship develop and deepen and become a relationship. And, oh, my God. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Like, I'm... You know, there are a lot of shows out there where you have these two characters, often two men, and they have this great deep friendship, and a lot of people out there, especially queer people, will sit back and be like, aw, they're such a good couple, but they never become one, because it's like, no, we can't have these two characters of the same sex actually become a couple. Yes, they have a wonderful relationship and they love each other deeply, and it would be really satisfying for really everybody involved, but that's just not gonna happen. And this show is like, they fucking love each other. They should hook up.
They love each other hard in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In fact, they do hook up. They talk about it.
And that's not saying, by the way, because I know fucking people are going to say this. Yes, two people of the same sex can just be friends. Two people of the opposite sex can just be friends. In fact, that's actually a bigger problem in media, is that you apparently cannot have a male and female lead just be friends most of the time.
Yeah.
I've had people tell me, why can't two guys in media just be friends? And it makes me want to scream. Because, like, 99% of the media I grew up with was like, nope, they'll never be a couple, even though they work. And finally...
Han and Luke are never gonna bang.
Did you know that was actually, like, a really big issue with the Star Wars fandom back in the day?
Yeah. I believe it. Because their chemistry is way better than Han Leia.
Yeah.
Yeah. People used to write fan fiction of those two characters. And in the Star Wars fandom, people were really like, oh, man, you can't write about that. That's awful. You're awful. And now nowadays.
Yeah. I'm so impressed with cartoons. I'm glad that people get to grow up with cartoons that I wish I had when I was a teenager, you know,
right.
Cause seeing this, it's really important to see this relationship, because, you know, like you, I grew up watching cartoons where I was like, I'm sensing sexual tension, and then nothing happens because they are the same sex or gender, you know? And I'm so impressed that they just went for it, you know. I did my rewatch of this show over the past couple days, and Harley being Ivy's greatest fear brings on a whole other meaning once you've seen season two. I was like, oh yes. My god, that's amazing. I was genuinely rooting for these two characters to get together. I'm rarely like excited for romance, but like Harley and Ivy, I was like, fuck, they really click, you know, and have such good chemistry. And you know, like we were talking about before, Ivy sees Harley trying to get out of this abusive relationship and just get away from this guy, and Ivy is also having her own problems with guys because she, you know, cares so much for plants and she doesn't like people, but she finds Chuck, Kite Man, and doesn't want to, you know, he's like the most decent guy that she's met, and she doesn't want to hurt his feelings because she sees that he has a good heart. But I think she mistakes that for romantic feelings, and that's pretty common with assigned female at birth people who are raised to be, you know, polite even in situations of uncomfortability. You know, like she sees, like, maybe this is what I'm supposed to do. He's not terrible, so maybe I should just be with this guy. But Harley sees, like, I don't know if you actually like this guy.
That's the thing. Like, I didn't like Kite Man at first. I got to like him probably at around the same pace that Ivy did. He has this offbeat charm about him, like this aloofish charm, or not even aloofish, just kind of like
simple.
Not oafish. Yeah, he's got a simple charm to him, and it's very, very clear, made evident by pretty much everything that happens in the show, that he is. Like, Ivy is way above his league in literally every respect of their lives.
Yeah.
And they make constant mention of that. That's not even beating up on Kite Man. He, like, one of my favorite interactions is, wait, do you think I'm ridiculous? I mean, don't you? Like, that's one of their first that's one of their first interactions.
Yeah. Because, like, I think Chuck... You know, he had to grow on me, you know, because he's just kind of a fuckboy when he first appears, but then you get to know him and you're like, oh, he's a quote-unquote villain, but he has a good heart. And that's kind of the thread that holds Ivy, Harley, and Chuck together, I feel, is that all three of them are, like Ivy talked about, Harley is a bad guy, but she's a good person. And I feel like the three of them are good people. You know, they won't cross certain lines, and that's kind of why they're able to exist in the same friend circle.
Yeah, they're the opposite of the anti-hero. They're the anti-villain.
Yeah,
like they're in that moral gray area where they play that trope out very hard in the episode The Line, which is about the Queen of Fables coming back, and they want to, you know, get this weather device in order to, you know, get an invite into the League of Evil, or Legion of Doom, sorry. Mm-hmm. And the Queen of Fables just wholeheartedly mass murders a bunch of innocent people just to make sure that nobody gets caught. Literally, like, her one lesson there is end the bloodline so that nobody comes back for vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Harley's like, oh yeah, no, that's not a line I'm willing to cross. And you know what? I'm even not willing to cross it by getting rid of this person that's clearly going to cause trouble later.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it comes back when, you know, Harley doesn't want to think about Ivy and is like, I'm cool. I'm awesome. I'm going to get these parademons. I'm going to fuck up the world. Everything's great. I'm like super evil. And Ivy's like, I don't know. Like, I'm ride or die for you, but is this what you want? Like, I don't feel like this is you, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, that comes back to just Harley, you know, she's always there. She's never judgmental, but she's concerned, and she communicates that concern. And
They both have these hang-ups that clash but balance each other so well, which is what makes them such a great couple by the end.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to watch Poison Ivy, by the way, because she's obviously gone her entire life building this image for herself where she's strong, she's independent, she gets shit done. But you can see where her actual insecurities lie when she sees the people she admires, like Catwoman, Like, the whole thing with Catwoman and trying to be her best friend is adorable. Because it's like, yeah, you know, I get that. I get where it's like, oh, this person is so cool, and I just want them to like me.
Yes.
I want to impress them. Like, she just stole your favorite jacket. Yeah, but it looks better on her, though.
And she knows how she is with Catwoman. The whole time, she's like, oh, like, you know, Catwoman, I can't. Selena's just this and this. And then to Selena's face, she's like, this is great. Everything's awesome. I love hanging out with you. I love how you ordered the Cobb salad for everyone, you know, because, like, you know, this is great. I don't even care.
Cobb squad for life.
But what makes it even more amazing is the fact that beyond all of that, Catwoman is clearly their idealized version of what a cool woman is, because both of them go to her for advice and she gives it offhandedly.
Yeah.
Just like, yeah, no, just do this. This will fix your problems. And it fucking would.
And that is sort of the interesting thing, because she's kind of fully realized. She's got her shit on lock, and that's what kind of makes her an interesting part of that whole dynamic, is that whenever she shows up, it's like, yeah, no, this is a person that obviously is
she knows what she wants. She goes, she gets it, she conquers. She is the definition of Yas Queen. Yeah.
But also, I want to take just a minute to talk about King Shark. Because we haven't mentioned too much of King Shark.
He is, in season one, he is my second favorite character. In season two, I feel like he falls off.
Even though he has an entire episode dedicated to him, his part of that episode was actually like the least interesting part.
Yeah. It was the like B plot of a C plot.
Yeah. And in that regard, it was still, you know, a funny idea, but it's also like, and it does tie back into the story, luckily it actually has some relevance, but the whole thing where, like, I have to go back home and, you know, I have to get married to this person I don't love, and it's like, okay,
it plays into nothing.
It does actually kind of play into the dilemma going on with Ivy and...
Yeah, you're right. It does have some payoff when he talks to Ivy about, like, yeah, no, I went and did it because I had to, but, you know, we're both going to have, like, our own things on the side. This is literally just an arranged thing. Like, we don't really, like, I'll show up to Sunday dinners with her parents because they're, like, really religious, but...
Yeah, that's true. I think it's just because so much was going on with the bachelorette party that it was a million times more interesting than the bachelor party, quote unquote. It wasn't even a bachelor party. Like, he ditched, you know, like, I was just so excited about what was going on with Ivy and Harley that I was like, I don't want to see these fish sing about shit. Can we please go back?
You feel like you're padding for time.
Yeah.
Oh man. I feel like there's a billion things I could bring up now because we're talking about the bachelorette party. There's fucking Freeze's wife. Also, this show kills off villains.
Yeah, super ballsy.
It kills people left and right. It has, by the end of season two, it has a fully realized and completed plot, which, you know, it left itself open to another season with a question mark, which I'm for, but I'm also way cool with that being what we got.
Honestly, like, as much as I do, I would love a third season. I would love to see Harley and Ivy, you know, as a couple doing couple shit, because
But you don't want that ruined, because you know that's the only thing that can happen.
Well, and so the interesting thing is, when it comes to relationships in media, a lot of the time is spent on the will they, won't they. How many times in entertainment have you seen two characters become a couple and the series goes on or the movie goes on?
Right, yeah. Because, like, I would be very interested to see what they would do, because there's no real blueprints. With Kurosami, it happened and the show ended. With She-Ra, it happened, the show ends. This, what are they going to do? Like, where do we go from here? I would be very interested. And like we were just saying, this show is super ballsy that they're just killing off villains. I would love to see, I trust them with, like, seeing where they go with a relationship.
Yeah.
The universe they set up is so interesting, too, because it's got this, like, golden age aesthetic where all the villains are very campy. They have their own lairs that are built ostentatiously in the middle of Gotham City. You know, they all do, like, very prototypical golden era crimes, like robbing banks or, you know, holding places hostage with bombs. Mm-hmm. Very golden era. But it also is, kind of in a modern day aesthetic too, when it comes to like technology and you know, politic baiting and things like that. It's a very interesting world feel that I had no problem falling into.
That actually calls back to one of my favorite jokes in the entire show, which is when Harley joins the Legion of Doom, and she's sitting around with them, and Joker is going on this, like, basically lining up what he wants to do with Joker Tower.
Yeah. I want to build a tower with my face on it!
Okay, good. Sounds like a good plan.
And then fucking Harley starts calling it out, and everyone starts noticing, like, yeah, you know what? This plan kind of sucks. And then just, I don't know why, but this line will always stick with me. It's like, looks like you came up with the frosting before you baked the cake. Exactly, Harley. You need to bake the cake first.
It's a good line.
It is. It's, and also that interpretation of Lex. He's just so chill. Oh, I love how chill he is.
I also love that it's played by fucking Giancarlo Esposito.
Yeah.
Gus from Breaking Bad.
Oh my god, really?
Yeah, yeah. I heard it. I heard it when he first started talking. I'm like, is that Gus Fring? Holy shit, it is. And he fits really well. Even though Lex Luthor is essentially like kind of a I don't know, tier 3 character in the show. He doesn't do a lot. He shows up every now and again, but
oh yeah, no. He has nothing to do. But when he's there, I do like his input because he always, again, he's just this calm like, "Yep, I'm the villain. Hi there. How can I help you?" I kind of love that version of Lex just for this show.
Yeah, Giancarlo Esposito just really plays off that confidence, that coolness. It makes me really want him to play Lex Luthor more, actually.
Actually, yeah. Yes. I could definitely see him as a very serious Lex.
Because I actually really like this interpretation of the DC universe where the heroes are actually slightly inept. You see, obviously Batman catches people. He gets shit done. But every time we see him on screen, it's like he's always on the back foot.
Yeah.
Or he's always in the background, just like being this somehow imposing force.
You know who I'm sad we didn't have in the second season, but I completely understand why they did what they did with him?
Who?
Fucking Scarecrow.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Scarecrow was actually really funny in season one. He only had a couple of lines here and there, but just the way that he went about it, like the actor they had for him, he was just like, I loved his moments, and then they kill him, and I'm like, okay, well, you know, I get why they did that. It worked for the scene. It was great shock factor, but damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's played off with this, like, very kind of, I don't know, subtle British accents. Let's see, who played him? Rahul Kohli, who I'm not entirely familiar with. I'm pretty sure he's just done a bunch of network television things. Yeah, that seems to be his deal. But the way he played him off was like kind of charming in like an offbeat sort of way.
Yeah.
You know who we haven't talked about once this entire thing?
Gordon.
I was actually going to say Batman, but yeah. You know what? So I want to talk about Gordon for a second because I've lavished praise on the show, but I actually kind of, I got to be honest about Gordon. I didn't love him.
Really?
I didn't hate him, but I didn't love him.
Here's the thing that I think really makes Gordon work in the show. It's the fact that pretty much all of the main reoccurring players in the show, they have some big thing going on with relationships, either to their significant other or to the friends around them. It very much plays into the core of that when you see this broken Jim Gordon who literally is trying to call Batman out to the bat signal to have like a small therapy session to talk about his broken marriage in which he's being cuckolded.
Yeah. So with a lot of the different characters in the show, I was actually okay with a lot of their reinterpretations. Making Jim Gordon, of all characters, this actually,
deranged.
You know what? Deranged and pathetic. I honestly, it just didn't sit very well with me. Not, and part of that does have to come down to my, you know, appreciation for Jim Gordon as a character, but also just because it's like, I don't know, it's one step too far in the looniness for me. Because with, you know, with other certain other characters like Clayface, I'm like, okay, you are literally a massive clay that can transform into anything he wants. I can take your lunacy. With fucking Psycho, you're just crazy. You're an insane little, like, crazy man who can lift things with his mind.
Yeah, Napoleonic, just probably a fairly underrated character in the show. I think he has, like, some real fucking funny moments.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but with Gordon, it always just kind of seemed a little too
sad.
Sad is a word for it. I was kind of like, oh, this is hard to watch. It's hard to see. And it never came off incredibly funny for me. It just never hit home as something like, wow, this is really hilarious. It was more just like, oh, Gordon, no.
That's totally fair.
A very mean-spirited take on the character. But if you look at the world around him, like the kind of world that has been set up, where there are all just these villains in layers that consistently commit crimes that nobody is able to stop except for superheroes.
He's
pretty defeated.
Yeah, and I get it. In that regard, look, I actually, it makes sense. They make it make sense. It's just not enjoyable to watch.
He never gets a win, I think, is the problem. Not a real win.
Yeah, he never actually gets a real win, nor does he seem to really deserve it most of the time. Mm-hmm. And that's also the other thing. It's like, yeah, he's just really shitty.
He has a little mini character arc with Barbara, who's becomes Batgirl throughout the course of an episode.
Yeah,
and they have like a small episode where they're trying to get together while Batman is recuperating and they're fighting crime together, and he realizes, or no, she just outright says that it's her. And one line that I think some people might be uncomfortable by, but I found kind of funny, it's like, are you gonna help? Like, he goes to the cabinet because he's been dealing with alcoholism throughout the entirety of this thing, and just starts dumping the stuff into the sink. Now are you gonna help me out? Now are you just gonna stand there? Or are you gonna help me get? Or are you gonna help me do a montage where we dump out all this alcohol and skip all the hard parts of alcohol dependency?
Yeah, no, that was a. Again, there are some solid jokes with them throughout. And also, it was nice to see him repair his relationship with his daughter. But and here's, okay, so here's the thing. The show handles a lot of different really difficult subject matter in interesting ways, like abusive and toxic relationships. And then with Gordon, it's like, whatever. They just treat him like shit throughout all of it. I'm like, okay. You know. I mean, it always just came off a little bit too mean-spirited and never particularly funny for me. And that's one of my gripes with the show. Like it it might even be my biggest gripe, to be honest.
I could easily see that, because I too was kind of put off by their interpretation of Jim Gordon as much as I understood it. It's like every time he's on screen, I'm like, something's going to irk me.
I did like their interpretation of Batman, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he was actually phenomenal throughout. I'll be right back.
All right.
Hello?
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed the interpretation of Batman in this one, and especially his relationship to all the people around him.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Who played Batman in this one again?
Diedrich Bader.
Diedrich Bader.
I couldn't believe they got Diedrich Bader back from fucking Brave and the Bold. Holy shit.
Yeah.
What a great pull. Like, honestly, I don't think they could have done a better pull for Batman for a show like this. Holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
He worked out really well, and when it's strange. There's like an inconsistency to how effective he is, because apparently he's very good about catching bad guys and putting them in prison. Obviously, when he's on his hiatus, shit gets way worse, but he, like, people also get away from him a lot. Like, it is literally like this inconsistent game of like what is any given character's power level at any given time.
Yeah.
It's but one part where I think it really stands out is his relationship with Robin.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Okay, my favorite version of Damian Wayne, by the way.
Yeah.
played by Jacob Tremblay, an actual child, Robin,
yeah.
which is the best way to go.
When you can. When you can. You can't always, but the fact that they got a real kid to be Damian Wayne in this, fucking fantastic.
Yeah, and it just reiterates and, like, rubs salt in the wound so much more of Harley trying to get a nemesis, and it's just this child.
And like, and they play him out like an actual kid too. He's just like trying to be adorable when he can. And there's this big fight with the lasers and stuff. So yeah, I'm Harley Quinn's new nemesis, and just like going on a talk show talking about it. They go so far as to try to kidnap Lois Lane to redact an article stating that he's the nemesis. Superman shows up and brings Robin with him.
And he comes in on a hoverboard.
A hoverboard, just trying to act all cool, like, go, you can leave, Boy Scout. I think there's a cat up a tree somewhere. Oh, he's just adorable.
I love Uncle Superman. I love Uncle Superman so much.
Oh.
Also, yeah, interestingly, so Batman, obviously, being the main character of Harley Quinn's based universe, gets the most screen time out of all the Justice League. And the rest of them are just kind of there. they occasionally show up like, oh yeah, we're also part of this universe too. We're constantly written out because obviously if we were around, none of this shit would go down.
Yeah, they are gone throughout like a vast majority of season two after they are sucked into the Queen of Fables storybook so that they can't fuck with the story moving forward.
Yeah, it was really funny because when Aquaman first appears, he's like, hello, it is I, Aquaman! And I was like, this is a very interesting version of the character. And then it turns out to be Clayface, and I was like, oh, of course.
But he has one of my favorite jokes in the scene just after that one. King Shark, your mother would be very disappointed in you. You are not my daddy. That is contrary to what she said. Yahoy! And he high-fives a dolphin that jumps out of the ocean. I fucking died.
Oh, it's so good. Also, I love, somebody pointed out in chat, the fucking paywall stuff with the Daily Planet. That is a...
$7.99 is a pretty ambitious price point. You don't even get the crossword.
This is actually a show that is very much a modern comedy in every regard because it's weird. As somebody who grew up during the 90s and the early 2000s, watching adult cartoons dealing with, its modern issues, it's so interesting to see. Talking about paywalls on news sites. Where's my fucking electric car, Bruce?
Yeah. So, I didn't want to know who that was. If I wanted to know who Batman was, I would have done that. Also, I put a down payment. Wayne Tech was supposed to have an electric car out by this year. I put down my down payment. Where's my electric car, Bruce?
Oh my god, that's actually one of my favorite. That is my favorite Joker line in the entire show. 100%.
It's amazing because they play off this big reveal. Oh my god, Batman's Bruce Wayne, and then they don't give a shit about it in the next scene.
Because there's no reason for him to give a shit. He never cared about that.
Mm-hmm.
You go ahead. Oh, I was just gonna say the scene with the two like Meninist kind of characters, the comic book people that are wearing like
yes!
release the Snyder Cut shirts.
Oh
and
my god!
I put that on Twitter, like that little scene when I was trying to be like, please watch Harley Quinn. It's very good. They are so fucking ballsy, and I love it for them just calling out the people who would hate their show for no reason. I died. I was laughing my ass off at that.
Because the ultimate punchline behind that is the guy who's like bitching about the show having never watched it because it's not cool. It's got girls in it. Clearly seen every episode.
Yes, clearly he enjoys it. And is just like, it's not good. I'm going to write a review online.
Snyder Cut.
There are people who will literally hate watch something and then bitch about it later. And see, this is why. And you know what? That's why I've stopped talking almost entirely about the things that I don't like, Because if it's a TV show and I don't like it, why would I continue watching it just so I could bitch? And people exactly. do that.
They toxically absorb media that they don't like for no reason other than to feel the hatred.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so like antithetical to what this show is about. So it's just going to poke all sorts of fun at like fun at it and like poke fun at culture in general. They literally very early on, Dr. Psycho gets canceled as a villain for using the word cunt.
Oh my god.
They cancel a villain.
Yeah, like, because that's too evil for them. They're like, this is not our brand of evil. We don't condone. He's out of the like, league. He's banned.
It's such a brilliant scene, too, because this Wonder Woman just, like, knocks his energy back at him. He's like, ah, you fucking cunt. And the whole world stops, like,
yeah, because fucking, yeah, as you said, Lex Luthor, this is not the kind of villainy that we here at the Legion of Doom can appreciate and endorse. It's they like, kick damn. Him
out of, they kick him out of the group of bad guys. And he becomes such an amazing, like, whipping boy for Harley Quinn's season. Crew. Yeah, he's the whipping boy for the first season, and actually kind of the, like, for the second half of the second season, he's basically the antagonist.
Yeah, he's the main villain of season two, which is mm-hmm. such a good well, move. What a brilliant play on their part.
Yeah. It goes, yeah, like, the ultimate misogynist versus the, you know, the power girls, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically.
And it's basically him and Jim Gordon that are the antagonist for the second half of season two. Because Jim Gordon, he kind of goes heel.
Yeah.
Because he is deranged. He just... He wants to be a damn good cop so damn bad.
Yeah.
Relive his glory days. There are so many amazing supporting characters in this show. Going back, you were talking about how one of your favorite characters was Frank.
Yeah.
I noticed this because he's... I have a soft spot for that character because he's clearly based off of the design for Audrey 2 in Little Shop.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I think that homage goes even further because Frank Oz was the director of the movie. So I think he's literally named for that.
Oh, that'd be cute.
Oh, huh.
God, who else haven't we given like time to shine in this show? Because they're just like... So many little moments. Cy Borgman, Jason Alexander, fucking George Costanza.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Actually,
another character that you, like, really hate at first, but grows on you. That's something this show does really well. They give you this broken, kind of malicious and mean-spirited character, but they kind of, like, shine them up for you as you go, and you start to see the appeal of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it really happened more in the second season than the first, where in the first season, like, he definitely becomes more interesting, especially with his past, but in that second season, he becomes a part, he's really actually a part of the crew, and I kind of love that.
Mm-hmm. And all of his, like, weird fucking, like, cyborg tech, when he turns into a fucking car.
Yeah, I love how they're, God, like, not so subtle. Yeah, they're not subtle about how disgusting the process is.
Yeah,
literally turning into that Tetsuo metal man.
Yeah, oh my god. I remember watching that the first time, and I'm like, okay, you know what? Out of all the things in this show that has made me uncomfortable, this one actually is physically unsettling me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And there are a lot of like really graphic, bloody deaths and like horrific things that happen to people throughout this show, a lot of which that are played off for in that like I said, Rick and Morty style visceral punchline type.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but then there are those scenes where people are just getting like ripped apart, melted. Like you see a lot of different ways for people to die in this.
Yeah, actually, that first episode intentionally inoculates you to what the rest of the series is gonna be like. Like when Joker melts a bunch of motherfuckers on a yacht. You're like, oh, okay, I understand, show, what you're going to do. I get it now. Mm-hmm. Thank you for telling me early on. Because, yeah, oh, man. As I said, R-rated DC animated series right out the gate.
and really good on them for, even though he's like not a huge part, but they got fucking Michael Ironside back to play Darkseid.
Oh yeah, I forgot about it. Like, so I actually didn't even pay attention to that while I was watching. I was just like, oh hey, it's Darkseid. But you're right, yeah, they totally got him back.
Like, he doesn't play a huge part. He's basically only in season two and only in like a few episodes at that, but it was a nice nod to some of the, like, you know, fan favorites from the past, because that's a lot of what this is. You're taking this character made famous in the, you know, mid-90s by Paul Dini and Bruce Timm, who has exploded in popularity. Like, this is probably the most famous comic book character that did not start in a comic, Harley Quinn.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So popular that she was adopted into the comic book universe, spawned a billion different series, and has been just a mainstay in all of, like, the Gotham royalty, basically.
Can I say what people have talked about, you know, you've talked about, like, what you didn't like about the show. I have one main gripe
with
the show.
Please do.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think I was really disappointed in the Penguin, because you have all of these unique characters where they took, like, Clayface and Bane and made something totally cool and different with them and, like, flipped it on its ass and was like, what if we did this really outlandish thing with this character? And the Penguin just kind of sticks out like a sore thumb, because they were like, what if we made him a Jewish stereotype?
Yeah,
and
what,
that's
what if we make
it.
Him Jewish?
Yeah, yeah. What if we just made him aggressively Jewish?
Yeah, and it's like, so, I'm not Jewish, but I could see people being offended by how he's portrayed, just because, like, episode two in season one, in my opinion, is the weakest episode. It's the bar mitzvah episode, because there's a lot of cringy shit in there where I was like, I don't know if I find this funny.
It's also the introduction of Kite Man. It has a lot of fun moments in it. It has my favorite Bane moment in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bane is fantastic in it. And I love the concept of, like, Harley showing up and trying to, like, be buddy-buddy with them. The Joker's, like, shutting everything down. There are a lot of really good nuggets of, like, moments in episode two. But it's the weakest, in my opinion, of the show, just because, like, I don't know, the Penguin just... I wish they had done something more creative. Like, I did a video on my channel about Harley Quinn, the cartoon, and I talked about this, where I was like, if you gave me money and resources, I would, like, work my ass off to come up with something new and fun and maybe try something else. But I will say that they are ballsy in that they were killing off villains. So it became not an issue. I was like, oh god, if Penguin was gonna stick around, I don't know what was gonna happen. But yeah, because he's gone, I'm like, okay, my main problem is gone now, so I don't really have anything else to complain about.
I did really like Wayne Knight's voice for him, though. I thought he played him very well. Wayne Knight, best known as Newman from Seinfeld, or the guy that gets eaten by the frill-necked dinosaur in Jurassic Park.
Yeah, no, he had a perfect voice for the Penguin. I loved that. But I am at least impressed that, like, I have no idea what was going on behind the scenes, but I feel like maybe they were a little like, he's gonna die anyway, so, like, we should maybe fix our mistake and just kind of sweep it under the rug and keep moving. Because it got better and better until it became non-existent, because it wasn't an issue anymore, and I was glad about that, because this is such a good fucking show that I feel like if they had kept the Penguin around as, like, a main villain, it would have dragged everything down so much.
I can see that.
Yeah, he's actually the first, aside from, I mean, I guess Joker doesn't really die, he just kind of goes away for a bit, but Penguin's kind of the first real main villain to die, isn't he?
Scarecrow.
Scarecrow dies before that, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I can't remember, actually. Does Scarecrow die before Penguin?
Penguin dies in season two.
Yeah,
Scarecrow dies
at the end of season one.
You're right, yeah, because Harley gets frozen in the block of ice, and they're divvying up the territories. That's right.
Yeah.
Do you want to know something that I found kind of funny when it came to the casting?
What? Mm-hmm.
the two biggest, quote-unquote, problem women in Dr. Psycho's life, Wonder Woman and Giganta, Giganta being his mind-slaved ex-wife that's a giant, both played by the same actress.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Vanessa Marshall. And you can hear it when they talk.
Didn't Vanessa Marshall play Wonder Woman before? I feel like she did.
Maybe?
I don't know. I'm just...
She's been in a lot of Cartoon Network series.
But yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, she actually did. She played Wonder Woman in Flashpoint.
Okay. All right. Cool. I was curious about that.
Oh, and in Crisis on Two Earths, it looks like she was Wonder Woman in a few of the animated movies.
Yeah. Superman, okay.
Most recently, Superman Red Son.
Joker torturing Psycho by making him watch feminist marches is so good.
Psycho is such a bizarre, like, weirdly misogynist character, because they never go into why he is so misogynist. Like, they kind of play it off as a joke at one point, where it's like, yeah, and I saw, like, he saw, like, a carnival accident because he wasn't tall enough to go on one of the rides, and since then I've hated women. That doesn't really add up.
Yeah, Darkseid does not believe that adds up.
He's part of the crew, but they never make you think that he's a good guy, which I appreciate, you know, because Harley and Ivy put him in his place whenever everyone actually puts him in his place. Even Shark, King Shark is like,
yeah, King Shark.
That's fucked up when he says or does something awful.
Oh, by the way,
Yeah, I was going to say the ultimate show of just like what kind of a whipping boy and how they view him is like the first season that they team up to go steal Maxi Zeus's gold. He's like, okay, what do you need this master telepath to do? I need you to crawl through this vent and open the door on the other side. I'm a fucking telepath. Yes, but you're also the only one that can fit in that vent. Ah!
By the way, someone we haven't talked about, which, oh my god, Riddler.
Yes!
Oh, Riddler's great. I love Buff Riddler.
Buff Riddler's so good. Jim Rash does such a good job.
Oh my, one line that it's so gross and it's so juvenile, but I fucking laughed was, I ate a peach and shit out the seed. And just fucking jumps away.
I ate an orange and shit out a seed. Thanks, Ivy. As they're escaping Arkham.
Oh my god.
The politics between the villains is just so funny. It's always a popularity contest, and Joker is always on top just because. Even though as Harley points out, he doesn't have powers. He's just really good at bullying you.
Yeah, that's his superpower. It's just being abusive.
Oh my god! Sorry, I'm also reminded of the scene where that kid takes in tries to take in the plant, and then just like, oh my god,
that's why your dad doesn't remember your birthday.
Exactly. Fucking Calendar Man. Oh my god, I wish we'd seen Calendar Man again. I'm sad we never saw Calendar Man again.
Oh, you remember how long the porn clown's been in lockup, but you can't remember your own son's birthday. Oh, come on, I know it's June-ish.
Yeah, oh my god, that's such a good joke that he can't remember his son's birthday.
Oh, man.
It has all these lovable little wink at the camera moments for anybody that knows what's going on, but it's also written in such a way that if you don't know what is happening, you can still appreciate the comedy. And that is what makes it such a good goddamn show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so crazy to like show anyone a scene from this show and be like, it's wholesome. They'd be like, it's wholesome. What the fuck are you talking about?
There are parts that brought tears to my eyes. I'm like, oh.
Yeah,
me too, but I feel like that's just because I hit, like, ever since I hit 30, everything makes me cry now.
Just, like, I'm still just very impressed with Harley and Ivy's backstory and how they are able to, they flawlessly just kind of weave this cool friendship that weaves into more and just little tiny things that you like during a rewatch that I picked up on, you know, how like Harley knows that the ring Kite Man wants to give Ivy isn't her taste at all, and she knows exactly what to plan for her bachelorette party. She knows that she does all this research to do this environment, you know, thing at the center of it, and you really believe that these two characters are meant to be together.
Yeah.
It's so impressive.
And in the same show with a cancer gun.
Yes. We've been seeing you, chat.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I was gonna say,
it can go from these like immensely wholesome moments to these immensely violent, funny moments. and then these like very dark, funny moments, like when, I can't remember the exact scenarios. It was in one of the later episodes in the second season, but I think Harley is trying to bust, kind of like steal something or get away from Wayne Tower, and they're going through this room of experimental technology. That's right. She was escaping with the unjokeified Joker.
Yeah.
And they're trying to get away from this hostage situation that Riddler set up. And a couple of mooks are standing in this, you know, room full of experimental technology. And she fires a ray gun at one. And
it does nothing.
He looks around like, huh, that didn't do anything. And you see this little plaque under where the gun was. It just says cancer ray. The henchman that's with that guy's like, oh my god, dude, I'm so sorry. I need to go talk to my wife. And Harley's like, why would you even make this?
Oh my god.
It's so good. Just her little, I'm so sorry, as he runs out of the room is so fucking funny.
Oh my god, I'm so sorry. Harley Quinn, you gave me cancer? Oh.
I wonder if that's a referential joke to, like, if, like, there are those, like, you know, there are, like, those Twitter haters, like, this show gives me cancer. This show would fucking do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
clearly. It wears it on its sleeves.
I just... Sorry, yeah, now I'm just brought back to that moment. By the way, it was really, really funny during that scene that we mentioned earlier about the two dudes on the couch.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember when that happened, and there was this one account who was bitching about that scene.
Of course.
And it was like, wow, I can't believe you would alienate part of your audience like this. And I just came in like, and I just fucking quote tweeted that. I'm like, it is amazing that the people that the show is calling out is tripping over their dicks, rushing to prove them right.
Art imitates life.
Yeah. Like, I like it when shows poke fun at the audience, especially the shitty people. Like, mm-hmm. I've actively been poked fun at by the things that I like. And you know what? I can take that. I understand. I get it. I'm like, you know what? It do be like that sometimes, though.
Because you're in on the joke.
Yeah. If you cannot take the joke, then you are the person in the joke. You are that guy. You are that guy. Live with it. Deal with it.
Also, the fact that the other dude's wearing, like, an anti-Last Jedi shirt as well.
Yes, the shirt that says The Last Jedi isn't canon.
Yeah, okay. I want to point out that I love that guy, but he wears a shirt that hurts me. I have to accept it, though. I have to accept it.
There's rumor going around that they, like, that part of Lucasfilm is actually, like, trying to make it so that shit, like, the three previous movies in the Star Wars universe are going to have their episode numbers stripped from them.
Oh my god, no. What? Oh.
Yeah, there's rumor.
Okay.
I mean, the rumor is probably unfounded, but I've heard it from several, like, different sources that claim to hear it from several different sources. So I'm literally spouting hearsay of hearsay. But I think it's funny.
Yeah.
Because I honestly wouldn't care because, yeah, I did not like that trilogy. It was a bad trilogy. With a few good moments.
The major thing is, though, that it's bullshit. It's definitely a bullshit rumor. But it is really funny to me that there are a lot of people out there who would really like that.
There are a lot of people that would really like that. I wouldn't say... And here's the thing. I'm one of those people that's like, if they did do that, if they did find a way to strip that from canon, it would not hurt me. I would not care.
Yeah. Unfortunately, with the third film, I'm like, oh yeah, no, it's a wash. It's a wash. Everyone back it up.
What third film? There's no third film. It's crazy they had two movies and that was it, huh? The weird trilogy.
Just like how even though they keep spouting that the Snyder Cut of Justice League is going to come out, will that day be a glorious day for the fandom?
Release the Snyder Cut.
It'll come out, it'll be on HBO, and you'll be happy about it, god damn it.
Cop the blood. Cop the blood now. Oh no.
Meanwhile, I still hold out hope that Flashpoint is just going to erase everything and restart it again.
What, you mean like reality or?
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's go with both.
I don't care.
If there are people out there that enjoy it, that's good. I like that people can have what they enjoy. I have not enjoyed a single one of the Snyder movies. Even like some of the more recent ones. I've only been kind of like lukewarm at best to any of the live action DC stuff, including Birds of Prey, which I think I like Shazam more than Birds of Prey.
I like Shazam more because Shazam is just a better made movie. Like it's just top to bottom. I love that script. I love its message. I love its characters.
But I will stand by and defend to the death the fact that the animated DC universe has always been some of DC's best stuff.
Yep. Until Paul Dini and Bruce Timm fully peaced out. After that, it was like New 52 stuff, and it was all bad.
Not even. I still think it's better than the live action stuff.
Wonder Woman and Shazam are better than any of the recent animated stuff. Way better.
I like this Justice League Dark stuff. The stuff with
some of the side stuff is actually kind of good. Like, but like any of the actual New 52 main stuff, no thank you, no thanks.
No, it's all solid, and this show is kind of at the pinnacle of that right now for me.
Like, what about Aquaman? What about Aquaman?
We talked about Aquaman. Aquaman's like, he's funny in the show, but he's literally only in like
no.
They
were talking about the movie.
Oh, nobody cares. it was like Aquaman, like the Jason Momoa Aquaman movie. It was them trying to do a globetrotting Marvel style movie, like trying to make it brighter, trying to make it funnier, and just missing on a bunch of fronts. It was okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I was at. Yeah, any final thoughts on Harley Quinn, where you'd like to see it go, if you'd just like to see it end where it's at?
I'd be okay if it ended where it's at. Mostly just because it had such an ending. Like, they drive off happily into the sunset. Yeah, okay. I'm good. I'm glad. I had two really good seasons of a show. They can't fuck it up. But if you told me, yo, they're looking at making a third season and I can guarantee you the quality is going to be as good as the last, yeah, please. Absolutely. I'll take another season of this.
Yeah, right, that's my main concern is if they're going to do a third season, I'm all for it. I just want it to be as good as the first two, you know? Because once you get around season three, that's when shows start to get a little shaky. But if it were to end with season two, I'd be fine. But like I said before, they're ballsy. I think they could. I'm curious to see what they would do with a season three, because now you have Harley and Ivy, who are both these characters who are not good at relationships. And I would love to see them figure out their problems, learn about communication, and learn to trust each other. You know, because Ivy said that one of her main issues with being with Harley is she was like, you just move on. You bounce around to different shit. And I trust you with my life, but I don't trust you with my heart. And that would be very interesting to see them learn to trust each other like that. I'd be down for that.
That's a very good point. I personally would love to see them continue, maybe not necessarily with this storyline, but keep working with stuff in this universe.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see them expand, maybe even focus on like a different superhero group that doesn't, or like a superhero or supervillain group that doesn't get a lot of love, because the style of this show, the writing behind it, I think does so many wonderful things that I think that they could lend that to other aspects. But I guess only the future will tell. I will leave it at this. Go watch Doom Patrol. For God's sake, go watch Doom Patrol. Thank you, everybody, for joining us for the TalkCast Pod Show. We'll see you guys next time.
Later, folks.
Bye.